Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, everyone. Joshy here, Manchester United fan. Thanks for having me on again, Kev. You can find me on Twitter at @doc_Joshy.
Hello, everyone. My name is Thomas Bath. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, website dedicated entirely to Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. You can get us on Twitter at wolvesblog, facebook.com/wolvesblog, on the website itself, wolvesblog.com.
Hi, I'm Jake, Newcastle fan. You can get me on Twitter or X or whatever it's called, at Jake Jackal with two N's.
Yeah, we all have a lot of built-up muscle memory on saying Twitter. That'll probably continue. But until we all figure that out, we have football back to pay attention to. Obviously, the Premier League season has now indeed started. I just wanted to start by getting your guys' opinions on that being the case. What did you miss most during the offseason? What was your favorite moment from match week one? And what do you think was the most surprising result?
I have to be honest, I didn't really miss the football. There was a lot going on that I actually could do with the break. It was one of those where there was a lot of football, and then sort of lots going on, and then we went on holiday at the perfect time. So, you know, we've had a really good break, and I thought, oh, and then when it sort of came to the preseason friendlies, have they already started again? It was like one of those where it just caught me by surprise. But actually, we all love football, so now that the season's on, it's like, great. I've already been to the pub to watch the game. I watched a Newcastle game yesterday. And actually, that was probably most surprising result, but not sort of surprising because Newcastle won, but maybe the manner of the win. I think, I went to the Carabao Cup final last year or last season. It was earlier this year. And I remember when, I rate Alexander Isak massively. So, I was watching the game yesterday, and he's class, right? So in that sense, not surprising, because they've got some really, really good individual players. And that Tonali looked good. Him and Bruno Guimarães alongside each other is going to be a really good combination. But I think it was the manner of it, because of kind of Aston Villa have also sort of come on in the transfer window, and the form that they had last year under Unai Emery. So yeah, I would say that was the most surprising result from the weekend. But yeah, always glad that the football's back, even if I actually probably didn't miss it during the summer.
Yeah, I think Joshy's stolen all my answers there. Really, they were all pretty tallied quite closely with what I was going to say. I think particularly being a Wolves fan, I found last season very stressful and demanding. So I was very happy for the break in that regard. It's great. It's great to have it back. I really enjoy having football on the weekends. I enjoy watching as many of the games as I can sort of manage to fit in on the TV, and you know, match of the day, the highlights, all that stuff. But it's the thing around your own football club that causes the stress and the anxiety. But I suppose on the flip side of that, what I do like about the game is that, you know, when you're worrying about football, it's taking up bandwidth and you're not worrying about other things in your life. So it's good to have it back in that sense, because you can always compartmentalize it and feel like, football doesn't really matter. So you're worrying about something less important, but But yeah, so it was, I wasn't sad to go into that summer break. I wouldn't say because of what Wolves have done over the summer, I'm particularly effervescent about going back in, but it's great to have it back generally. And yeah, match week one, what was my favourite moment? Well, my favourite individual moment was the moment of Roy Hodgson. I don't know if anyone else saw this, where the ball went out in the Sheffield United game. And the guy tried to wrestle it back from him on the touchline, and Roy just absolutely took off. He was not happy about it. You know, seeing a guy in his mid-70s get that angry with a player just trying to field the ball was quite entertaining. So, yeah, Roy Rage, as they were calling it on Match of the Day last night, that was that's an early contender for moment of the season, I think, let alone the first week. So, yeah, and most surprising result again, yeah, I think that the scoreline at St James's Park is the one that raises eyebrows. I mean, teams are going to get battered there all season. There's no surprise. The intensity they play at and the quality they've got, that's going to happen. But yeah, I think we all would have expected Villa to put up more resistance than they did there. Not the manner of what Newcastle did. It's more how little Villa were able to kind of cope with that. But yeah, outside of that, I'd say there were two results. Obviously, I expected Arsenal to beat Forest, but I was surprised how well, you know, Forest made a really good fist of it. Could have easily sneaked something at the end, so they get some credit. And I suppose the other one that sticks out in my mind is Everton Fulham, which, you know, maybe that's not a massive surprise that Fulham were able to go there and get a result. But I just really fancied Everton to start strong this season. I just thought at home, that's a decent fixture for them. They'll get the result. So I'm just, you know, surprised in a way that Fulham were able to go there and turn them over again and win that game. But from a Wolves perspective, that's very good, because Everton are a team I expect us to be in and around in the table. So for them to drop points in a winnable game, even in the first week, that's a bonus from my perspective.
Yeah, I sort of echo a lot of the thoughts of Joshy and Thomas. I think the older you get, the less you miss football during the close season. I think it's nice to have the break, and especially now the amount of games and just sort of looks like the 24/7 content driven stuff with football. It's nice to sort of switch off for a few weeks. And yeah, obviously there's still stuff going on, but you can sort of take yourself away from that, so that's been nice. But it is nice to have the games back. It, you know, gives you something to do at the weekend when you got a spare minute. There's always a game on, which is good. And yeah, it was good to see the Premier League back. It's sort of amazing how, you know, every new season they sort of say it's a fresh start for every team. And then you watch all the games, you just think this is sort of reminiscent of what this team was last season anyway. So it's sort of a lot of the teams are sort of performing as they were. You know, Tottenham, their fresh new start, their new attacking football, still more or less the same when the final whistle goes. And with Arsenal as well, all that money they spent and they were still sort of struggling in a home game against the team you'd expect them to sort of run out 4 or 5 nil again. So yeah, it is amazing how every season is new, but you get a lot of similar themes that run through season by season. The surprising result, there wasn't really that many surprising results this weekend. Obviously the Newcastle won, the manner of it was a little bit surprising, even to me. But yeah, so I do agree with that one. I agree with the Everton one as well. I thought Everton this year would be strong at home. I don't really rate Fulham that highly. I think they're sort of going to sort of regress a lot this season. And I think if you watch the highlights, I didn't see the full game, but I'd imagine the full game was similar. It did seem like Everton were sort of hammering on the door, couldn't get a goal, sort of had a goal wrongly disallowed, and then Fulham but sort of burgled 3 points there. So that was a bit of a surprising result, sort of what I was expecting and on what happened on the pitch. But yeah, I think you don't really get too many surprising results in Premier League these days. Every team's so strong and have good players that any team could beat anybody on their day. It's cliche, but it is true. But yeah, I'd probably say that was the most surprising one. And I do agree with Thomas, the way that Nottingham Forest sort of did fire Arsenal and made a real game of it was a real surprise, because I think a lot of people were sort of seeing that to be a 3-4 Arsenal, a 3 or 4 nil Arsenal win first day of the season, really comfortable, and it did start that way. But yeah, at the end, they could easily have lost a couple of points there. But yeah, it's good to have the football back.
Yeah, I'm having that reverse thing where last year was such a nightmare under Conte that even with Kane being sold, I was like, football, it's back. And I'm actually enjoying it now. But yeah, totally understand the need for a break, especially after obviously the World Cup in the middle of last year extended it well into May. I'm sure people will remember that like the Premier League ended in like a week and a half later, some of the Burnley players returned to training. That felt insane. Speaking of Tottenham, though, Harry Kane did indeed leave. Last week, the title of the episode was, has Harry Kane played his last game for Tottenham? And the answer, ultimately, yes, with him officially joining Bayern Munich on Saturday and already having played for them. No trophy as of yet, though. I'm sure many people will be keeping an eye on that. But I just wanted to ask the group, are you surprised that Kane ultimately opted to move to Bayern Munich this summer rather than having the opportunity to move on a free next year?
Well, I mean, I think all things considered, I'm not surprised. I think it's got to the point where it's actually probably a bit too late. But you know, he's given Spurs a lot of the best part of his career. He's tried his best to sort of elevate. I mean, last season because of Haaland, his sort of numbers went under the radar. But yeah, I think he bagged 30 goals, didn't he, in the Premier League? So you know, he's an elite level centre forward, and unfortunately, he's not at an elite club. So you know, I think it's just got to that point. And to a certain extent, you know, he may also have been thinking, well, at least I can leave and Spurs get 100 million, right? That might be in his thinking as well, instead of sort of screwing Spurs over. I don't know. Like, that's obviously just pure speculation. But I think it was about time. What's a little bit, maybe for him, he hadn't always banked on sort of going abroad, but it was just the situation, again, that the current environment, the market, there weren't any. I'm sure it would have, ideally he would have loved to have stayed in the Premier League and won trophies. But City, you know, once they didn't sign him that summer, they've gone and got Haaland, so they're not going to sign Kane. Chelsea, you know, they're in a bit of disarray, so it's not a good move for him anyway. United were probably the only option realistically, but then we were priced out like early on, and thankfully didn't get involved in the saga. So you know, he's opened up his mind and he's sort of gone on and. And ultimately, I think he's made a good choice. I mean, Bayern Munich, yes, you know, we didn't win the trophy last night, but I think overall, what they missed last season, certainly in the Champions League, was a top-tier centre-forward. So him going there, I think he immediately sort of elevates that front line because of his ability and just how good he is. But he's put himself in the position to realistically challenge for the Champions League. And on an individual note, you know, if he was to fire them, if he was to score the goals that wins them the Champions League in the next few years, he's put himself in the running for Ballon d'Or territory as well, right? So imagine he bags 40, 50 goals, which is what Lewandowski was doing when he was there, and they go on and win the Champions League. He's like the difference maker in a semi-final final. So they've won, you know, you can see him, he's in the running now for a Ballon d'Or. You don't have Messi in that conversation anymore. Benzema's not in that conversation anymore. Cristiano Ronaldo's not in that conversation anymore. It's wide open. So yes, he's not going to be able to come back and do the Premier League goal scoring record. But actually, you know, that's a sort of a little bit artificial because the top flight record is Jimmy Greaves. And also Haaland will probably beat that record in double quick time. So I think it's a good decision. And I think it's, you know, it's about time. And hopefully, to be honest, I've given him a lot of crap over the years just because, you know, football banter and whatnot. But I hope he does really well. I think he can go and really, I like it when players go abroad and play in different leagues, like Bellingham is currently doing in Madrid. So yeah, I hope he does well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, the good thing for me is I disagree with nearly everything Josh you just said there. So I've got some fresh things to say this time, other than to say that I hope he does well. You know, good luck to him. He seems like a good guy and excellent pro, fantastic player. You know, I hope he goes and achieves everything he wants to achieve out there. But yeah, I'm surprised he went. I just can't believe he resisted the temptation to be on a free transfer next summer when he would have had proposals from every single team every elite team in Europe. I can't believe there would be any top team that wouldn't have made an approach to try and sign him. So I'm surprised he was able to resist that. I do think the Premier League record has a lot of, merit. I think that is worth something. It's something that's constantly touted about. It's something that's always talked about when you're mentioning Alan Shearer's name. I think that would have mattered him. And I actually do think he will be of the belief, I can go to Bayern Munich for 3-4 years. I can come back to another English club then and I can still get this record. It probably needs, if he's winding down, he probably need between 3 and 4 seasons. And I think Harry's the type of player who could probably play into his late 30s because he's not a, running behind pace guy. He's a, works off intelligence and shooting. So if he looks after himself, I think he could have it all. But I'm surprised he's gone to Bayern. I mean, the only way that will be perceived as a good move from anyone in England, and, this is disrespect to the Bundesliga, so I apologise. The only way it will be perceived as a success is if he wins the Champions League. If he wins the Champions League, fair enough. He's gone there and he's done that. It's an incredible trophy. There's no merit to winning the Bundesliga with Bayern Munich. That's just the way it is now. That's not... It's a title, and you'll say, he won it, and he's a champion of Germany. But it doesn't hold sway, I'm afraid. Not in the eyes of myself, and not in the eyes of I think a lot of football fans. If he'd gone to Borussia Dortmund and he'd won the title with Borussia Dortmund, that would be. But I think Bayern have got such a vice-like grip on that league. And I know you can make comparisons with City because of the number of times they've won it, but I do think it's different because I genuinely feel there's a greater depth of competition in the Premier League. So in terms of how he's viewed in the UK, he'll need to win the Champions League and he'll need to win, maybe some individual honours for that move to be viewed as a success. But best of luck to him. I hope he does well, and I hope he will, I suppose, be able to say he's won a trophy, and that, and maybe getting that monkey off his shoulder is worth it, no matter what trophy he wins. So good luck to him.
Yeah, it's the one thing I would say against why you wouldn't have waited for a year is that he is now 30. Things can happen in a footballer's career. He might have picked up a serious injury this year. You can't always guarantee what's going to happen in 12 months' time. There's a very good chance that Thomas is right and he would have had all, the pick of the club. He would have been coming off the back of another 25, 30 goal season. But it doesn't always work that way. And I think if he was maybe 27, 28, he doesn't make that move to Bayern. But I think he's probably looked at it and thought, how much longer have I got at the very top level? It might only be another 2 or 3 years. Do I want to have another year at Tottenham where I'm not playing in the Champions League? And I think that's probably the driver. I think if he was a couple of years younger, he would have waited. I just think it's that age for him now that he's a type of player that could go on to play until he's 37, 38 to a very high level, but there's no guarantees of that. And he could have injuries, had injuries in the past. You just don't know what's going to happen. So I can understand why he's gone for it. And I think if he's being honest with himself, he's probably only got another 2 or 3 years at tops, at the very elite level. It's a big gamble to... sort of, quote unquote, waste another one of those. And I think maybe he thought in his own, heart of hearts, if he stayed at Tottenham for another year with it running down, maybe he would have been convinced to extend it. And I think maybe he thought, this is my opportunity to go. I've got the offer there. I'm going to a club that is going to be competing at the business end of a Champions League. It is a club that's going to win trophies. It's also a club that if he does well there and he scores the amount of goals he's scoring for Tottenham, and he wins things, he could win a Ballon d'Or at Bayern Munich. He's never going to do that at Tottenham. Could very easily happen at Bayern Munich. We saw Lewandowski was probably going to win the year when they didn't award one during COVID. Yeah. So it's very much in Kane's abilities to get a Ballon d'Or while he's at Bayern. I don't think it's possible at Tottenham. So there's a lot of pros to the move. So I can see why he's done it. I think mainly it's that age he's at now and just that opportunity to move to a really, really big club. And you've seen the way he's been received over there. He's not going to have quite the same relationship, but I think he's going to be very, very respected. And if he scores the goal, he's going to very quickly be loved and sort of be brought into that sort of Bayern institution. And it is quite an attractive one for a player. I can see why he's done it. He's probably looked at where Lewandowski got to while he's at Bayern and probably thinks he could probably get to similar levels. And although in England, we do rate him as one of the best strikers in the world, I still don't think he's got that complete respect across Europe. So yeah, I think he's definitely going to get that now. So I can see why he's done it. I think Bayern probably wouldn't have been his top move of choice, but it's the move he had offered to him. And it seems from a lot of the stuff I've read that he's wanted to leave Tottenham for a couple of years now, and he's been pretty set in that decision. He's never wavered. He's never sort of been convinced to sign that extra couple of years contract, even when it was going well under Conte. It does seem like this is something he's wanted. And it's just the first time he's had the chance. It's probably come later than he'd ever wanted. And he's just thought, right, I've got to go for it now. If I don't go for it now, maybe it will never happen for me. So I can see why he's done it. And I do think he's got a great chance of getting those individual honours as well as getting team honours. So I can definitely see why he's done it.
Yeah, a lot of really good points from you. This wasn't in the rundown, just kind of a quick poll. Will any of you watch more Bundesliga matches because Kane is there?
I probably will, but I get the Bundesliga because I live in Switzerland. It's all here and blasted in my face anyway. So my son is obsessed with football. So we've just always got football on. The other day he was watching a replay of Motherwell versus Hibs or some real weird match. Yeah, just because it was the only football on TV. But yeah, I'll probably stick that on. Like he watches Al Nassr now because Cristiano Ronaldo plays there, right? So he'll stick this on because obviously Kane's at Bayern Munich. So yeah, short answer, yeah.
I don't know if I would seek out to go and watch more Bundesliga matches, but certainly if I happened across a Bayern match on the TV, I would probably be more likely to carry on watching it to see how Harry Kane's doing. So I suppose yes and no is probably my answer.
I think I probably would. Yeah, I probably would watch more Bayern Munich because of Kane. But I think so.
Yeah, I was just really curious because it seems like while he was at Spurs, there was like a lot of hate directed his way. Obviously missed penalty and the glanced header swearing on his daughter life moment. There's just been like a lot of weird moments that it seems like neutrals haven't really supported him. But I have been wondering this because a lot of people have been talking about how like the Bundesliga is a step down in terms of audience and in theory importance. And I'm wondering if part of the idea is that he will draw the eyes to the league and that he's been kind of sold that as the idea. But yeah, really curious to see, as we see viewership figures, if Bundesliga or Bayern matches do indeed go up. The other thing I wanted to touch on was that I sent a drunken tweet earlier this week that was received in a very mixed way from Spurs fans. But basically, a lot of the narratives around Harry Kane being sold have been people basically framing it as though Kane is a victim, that Tottenham have failed him and that they never got him any trophies, and that he just should have kind of been along for the ride. And obviously there have been mistakes made along the way. But Tottenham basically gave up their entire recruiting structure and their ability and willingness to draw from the youth ranks and brought in Mourinho and Conte. All of that felt to me like the club trying to go for it, trying to maximize the remaining potential of Pochettino's squad with Kane and Son and Lloris and Dier and Davis to an extent. And so I was just kind of wanting an external opinion on this as I get shouted from both sides of Spurs fan base. Do you think that it was a failure of Tottenham that it ever got to this point where Harry Kane wanted to leave and ultimately was sold?
I don't think you can call it a failure. I mean, I think Tottenham have failed to win trophies, but it's not that they've failed him per se. He's getting paid very well. You know, everyone has a strategy now. You know, the aim is to win trophies. That's what they wanted to try and do. They didn't put a good plan in place. And maybe in that sense, they failed, you know, but they failed everyone at the club, not just Harry Kane. As good as he is as an individual and the elite talent that he is, it's a team game, right? And I just wouldn't characterize it as they failed him. I think it's, you know, like you say, they've put in place various strategies, managers, etc., to try and get that success. I don't know that I'd characterize it that way, because ultimately, you know, he could have left 2 years ago. He could have pushed for that move to City, right? And I don't know the ins and outs of the story, the sort of what they did behind the scenes to convince him to stay, aside from obviously a massive contract and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a weird way to sort of characterize the situation to say they failed him, because ultimately he's one player in a large squad, and you're playing against, you know, there are other clubs obviously going for these trophies and titles. So, you know, you want the best players to try and do that. And the idea would have been, look, Harry, you're banging in goals every year. You're our best bet of winning a trophy. And from his perspective, he probably was desperate to win a trophy with his boyhood club. You know, he's been there since, what, 11 years old? You know, so, you know, I think it's on both sides. He certainly hasn't failed Spurs. He's done his bit. But the other side of things, you know, it's more of a, it's more like the club overall probably, you know, has failed, and the fan has failed the fans and whatnot. But I wouldn't sort of say there's a specific onus on the club to have made sure that Harry Kane wins a trophy. But I can see kind of why, you know, people might sort of characterize it that way. And because he may have stayed, like if Tottenham had picked up a couple of trophies, he might have stayed and gone for that Premier League record and all that kind of stuff. So but these are all sort of, you know, what ifs. I think overall he's given Spurs a lot, and I think people should be happy for him and wish him well. And yeah, that's how I see it.
Yeah, I think the, you know, as an outsider, obviously you're inside it, Kev, you Tottenham fan, but I view it as you've got, on one hand, you've got Kane, who's a Tottenham guy, and on the other hand, you've got Levy, who is this notoriously fierce financial negotiator guy. And I think it seems like there's sympathy towards Kane and angst towards Tottenham, because it feels like Tottenham have kind of squeezed him on, because they know he's loyal and they know he's a good pro and he's going to kind of toe the line. He's not going to really throw his toys out of the pram and force through a move. I just think there was a feeling in the football community that that move to Man City 2 years ago should have been allowed to happen. Tottenham obviously had a player in the contract, and it's always refreshing, I think, to see a team fight tooth and nail to do that. But I think even 2 years ago, there was a feeling like he was at a point where that move should have been allowed to go, because Tottenham clearly weren't going to invest enough money to build a team that would enable him to go to the next level with Tottenham. So it was kind of a feeling either make Tottenham better. And yes, they did do that in terms of the managers they brought in. But the other side of that is they didn't really back those managers to the level either of those managers would have wanted to get the club to the level they wanted. I think both, if you ask Mourinho and Conte, both of them would say, yeah, you know, I came with a view to winning, but then actually the players I wanted in the market, we just weren't able to get because of how the club is structured and their recruitment policy. So yeah, I mean, I think it's those two things that shape the narrative, you know, that Kane was kind of almost held hostage, you know, by his own loyalty as much as anything, because he wasn't prepared to come out and really push through for a move. And yeah, you know, that I think that was the tipping point was that summer where he didn't go to City, followed by two more years of fairly, you know, mediocre returns for Spurs. That just kind of felt like it's dragging on a lot too long now. It should have been finished. So I just think there's a relief from the football community and probably Tottenham fans, if you're honest, that this saga is just over now and it's not something else that's just going to be hanging over the club.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one. I think the thing with this Kane situation is I don't think Tottenham have done anything bad to him. I think they've been a very competitive team in Europe and domestically throughout his time there. I just think that Kane has just developed into an elite player, and Tottenham are just not at that level. And that's nothing against Tottenham. It's very difficult to get to that level. There's only a handful of clubs in the world that are at that level. So at the moment, you've got a player that considers himself that level, they're always going to be wanting to leave, or, you know, it's difficult to sort of raise to their standards. And if you're Tottenham as well, as the player you've developed, you're going to want to keep them around. And for Kane, he obviously likes playing for Tottenham. He's been unfortunate in just the time he's played his football, in that when he came through, sort of, you had that Bale situation where Bale felt he got too big for Tottenham, and the finances were at a point then that Premier League clubs, so when a player wanted to leave, he sort of had to do it. Like Manchester United did it with Cristiano Ronaldo, Spurs did it with Bale, you know, Chelsea did it with Hazard. It happened. Liverpool and Coutinho. But I feel like in the last couple of years, especially the last 2 or 3 years, the Premier League clubs, even the ones near the bottom of the table, have just got so much money and just that infrastructure that they don't have to sell players. And I think that it sort of caught players and agents by surprise. They can really dig their heels in. They don't have to move players on. And they just don't have to consider it because they've just got so much money. It's not part of the plan. Obviously, sometimes with FFP, you want to trade a player, but you don't have to. And we see it, you know, teams like Crystal Palace, they keep a lot of players that wanted to leave. Wilfried Zaha, you know, the best example. And I think we're going to I think for a period, the players maybe have too much power in pushing for moves. And I think we've now pushed the needle the other way, where the clubs have too much power in keeping all the players that kind of want to leave. I think Kane probably regrets signing that contract that he signed, but he regrets it in hindsight just because of the way the football was developed. I don't think he would have regretted it at the time. He would have seen it as a bad move. But he just sort of tied himself down so much that he put all the power in Tottenham's hands. And I think we're going to see in the coming years players just really switch on from that. We've seen players this transfer window turn down moves to clubs because they haven't been able to get release clauses. I think we're going to see shorter contracts. I think we're going to see release clauses. I think we're going to see so much more that players and agents do to sort of protect themselves against these situations. I don't think it's Tottenham's fault. I think it's going to be just a natural development. I think we're going to see it with, you know, players that you might think now. One at my club, Bruno Guimaraes, he's in talks for a new contract. I can't see him signing a new contract that commits himself to Newcastle for a long period of time without there being some sort of break clause. I just think this isn't being a standard thing. And I think it's just the way football's going. But I think Kane's just been a victim of signing a contract and just playing his football at the wrong time where he's just been stuck. I don't think he's been unhappy, but he's just not had that opportunity to progress maybe when in a previous era he would have done.
Yeah, and I do think he progresses as an individual player. Obviously, the shift to being playmaker and striker under Mourinho and Conte led to great personal success. But yeah, I do think ultimately he just really wants to win a trophy. And as you said, this was kind of his first opportunity to take that up. Also, just you mentioning release clauses and shorter contracts. I'm really surprised it's a 4-year deal with like no whisper of a buyback or a release clause involved. Does he think he's coming back at 34 and still going to be able to beat Shearer like 34 to age 37?
I think he's at Bayern Munich and more likely to sell him on. I think that's probably what he's thinking. He's probably right. He's probably seen Mane. There's been other players. I just think that Bayern Munich are more likely to sell him on than Tottenham ever were. And when you get to it, the final year or two, normally you can get out of the club.
I don't know. I think it depends how it goes, right? Like if he's really hitting the ground running, banging in goals, whatever in Bayern Munich and picking up, you know, the champions, they're getting to Champions League finals and things like that. I think why would he? He'd probably want to do that more and more, right? I think once he's tasted that kind of I've lifted a trophy, he's not going to be like, oh, I'm done now. I'm going to go back to the Premier League. I mean, they want to continue doing that. That's the nature of this level of athlete, right? You don't get to his level without that inner kind of competitive streak. So if he's he's picked up the Bundesliga, they're going to have tough games. He's going to score goals. He loves scoring goals. And if he's the guy that does that and they win a title, he's going to get that feeling. Maybe everyone else at Bayern Munich won't get as big a feeling because they've won 11 in a row. But he will. And then there's that Champions, if they hit a Champions League final. I think it will all depend on how, you know, that side of things progresses. Because if he goes there and he's just scoring goals and they don't win titles and stuff, then it's like, okay, he's wasted his time and he may actually move back after 2 years, right? If they're not picking up or progressing to the end of the, sort of into the Champions League final piece, then that might be something that he goes, oh, I'm going to go back at 32 and at least I'll pick up that Premier League record. I don't know. But I think he's going in there. He looks committed. I think it shows commitment. And he could come back at 34, but I don't think that's in his mind right now. You can't do that. You need to, he's again at this level, you've got to be focused on what's in front of you. He can't be thinking, ooh, I'm just going to do what I do here and then come back and get the record. I think he's thinking, I'm going to come here and absolutely do what I've done, but at an elite level, but that requires the same or even more focus now because it's a new league, a new team, a new club. So yeah, I think he's there, and hopefully he goes and tears it up.
I think he's desperate, desperate, desperate for that Premier League record. I don't underestimate that. Don't think it's like it's an aside. He will want that record, and he will. But I think in his head, again, because he's an elite guy and I've seen lots of interviews with him, I think he will back himself to play until he's 37, 38, win what he wants to win wherever he goes, but eventually come back, whether it's with Tottenham or it's another Premier League club, smash in 50 goals, get the record and retire happy. That will be his plan, and he will have that mapped out in his head. So that will be, it's not a case of he's like, oh yeah, I'll go and do that and I'll just see where it takes me. He will have that objective in his head. I think he's had to weigh up, obviously, do I care about the record more than I care about winning trophies, you know, full stop, wider things. And he's probably reached the conclusion that I want those things more than I want the record, but he does want that record. So, you know, I think if he knocks off a league title and a Champions League with Bayern in the next year or two, it really wouldn't surprise me if he's then angling for that move back to a top Premier League club where he'd still be considered a top quality asset, you know. So that would be my view on it anyway.
Gotcha. All right, well, we'll wrap on it there. And folks at home, don't worry. I don't see much reason for us to keep bringing up Kane in future. I know it was kind of a big part of the last two shows, but really appreciate your guys' perspective on that. And maybe I'll stop getting yelled at so much on Twitter/X. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right, Joshy, we'll start off with you talking about Manchester United. Still yet to play this weekend, but plenty to discuss nonetheless. We'll start off with the less pleasant of the two, which is the Mason Greenwood situation. Obviously, news came out this week that they're consulting with women's footballers and some other people before trying to make a decision on whether or not to reintegrate him into the side. Some people kind of view that as pushing off the responsibility from themselves. But was just curious your thoughts on that entire narrative and what you think the ultimate decision may be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's gone on too long. And this idea that they're consulting players who are at the World Cup now, like the women players who are at the World Cup, and to sort of help their final decision, I think that's ultimately, if that is exactly what's happened, I think that's disgraceful. Like, they've had a long time to have had that consultation, right? It's been like months and months since the sort of charges were dropped. But I think what I saw actually was this has been reported incorrectly, but where actually what they've done is they've made a decision. They want to inform those players of that decision. That side of things that's happened this week, there's a little bit blurred in terms of what exactly has happened. That being said, they haven't sort of controlled the way the message has gone out well. And these players have been thrown under the bus to a certain extent, not just by the club, but also reporters. They know exactly what they're doing. Like, they've named the players, that whatever. So now these women have been targeted on social media by a section of fans who, you know, want Mason Greenwood back and playing at the club. Now, let's talk about that whole thing, right? I think for me, it's a simple decision in terms of where morally whether he should play for the club again. And I definitely not, right? He's a footballer. It's a privilege. You know, the ability to play football is a privilege, and the ability to be paid to play football is a massive privilege, and to do it for Manchester United, you know, biggest club historically in you know, one of the biggest clubs in the world, etc. I think there's people forget that this isn't like, he hasn't got a right. There's no like God like right for him to do that. So we should also be taking that stand. And we all heard and saw what heard the recording, saw the pictures. Now, yes, the charges have been dropped, but that doesn't mean he's innocent. That doesn't mean he didn't do what he was accused of doing. There are a lot of reasons why the charges can get dropped. Now, again, we don't know the ins and outs of what exactly happened, but we do know what we heard and saw. So I think that all of these things need to be taken into account. But what I'm not saying, though, and this is, I think, really important, I'm not saying the club should just cut him loose and then crack on. I think there's a duty of care, not just to him, but to his partner. Now, I think they're married now and they've got a child. So that he's young, right? And there is still an ability to learn as an individual. Like everyone, I'm not saying this is just a mistake where he's sort of, I don't know, gone drink driving or something like that. This is huge. But I think there is a duty of care for protection of potential future victims, let's say. So, you know, an education program, counseling, psychological support, that kind of stuff, not with a view to reintegrate him into the club, with a view to sort of protect, you know, to make sure he doesn't do it again, to be quite frank. And, you know, his partner is safe and his child grows up in a healthy environment. So, you know, people are saying he should be sent off to X, Y, Z on loan and sold to this club in a foreign country or whatever. I've seen that being touted. I'm like kind of going, well, this is that for me is, again, not an ideal situation. Someone like him, in terms of what he's done, he's clearly not a stable person, right? There's something, you know, what he did was, you know, it's just like most normal people wouldn't think that way, right? So there's something there where if you let's say you cut him loose, it makes him stressed out, angry, resentful, bitter, and then he just, you know, the anger is taken out on whoever's in front of him. Similarly, send him out to Turkey on loan and whatever. I think it's not a simple situation. And then there's the legal side of things. And now this bit, I don't know. I'm not an expert, but I have worked with employment lawyers within my own work within the UK. You can't just cut someone loose, right? There are ways in which his lawyers will try and protect him, or he wasn't found guilty and all that kind of stuff. And now you've done this to him, you've impacted future earnings. You know, there may be that kind of discussion to be had. So I do sort of sympathize with the club to a certain extent. But when you boil it all down, the only reason they haven't sort of made the decision that they should be making is, which is, you know, to say he's not getting back into the United team, but we're going to help and support him. I think that has to be part of it. But the only reason they've not done that is because he's a 100, 150 million pound asset. In the current climate, if he was still playing and at the level that we could see his trajectory going, he's a 150 million pound asset, right? He's a top talent. If this was, I'm not going to put a name on it because it would be unfair, but if this was a fringe player, everything I'm saying would still be true, other like in terms of how the club should handle it, but it would be done and dusted. They would have done that a long time ago, right? So for me, this is a really poor response from the club. It's a really, there's so many things to be said about if he comes back into the team, like what does that say about what we, you know, what we like role models, you know, we talk about footballers as role models. So what does it say about like the club and what it accepts? And I do think that there is for him on a personal level, it shouldn't just be, oh, he's done, the rest of his life should be shitty, right? You know, you hear about ex-convicts who maybe come out and they sort of help others through their own work and they, you know, because they're rehabilitated, they educate others. But the difference is he's not faced any real consequences aside from not playing football, right? Which is not a true, genuine consequence. So I think there is, we shouldn't just have this idea that, oh, he's done and dusted and that's it. What a disgust. I mean, it is disgusting what he's done, but we should allow this kind of support and education to protect him and others, right? To get him to a point where he understands what he's done and whatever, not with a view to reintegrate him, right? Because I know I know I might get some stuff sent to me on Twitter if people hear this, but with a view to actually just, you know, he's a high profile person. It's an opportunity for the club to really show what they mean. And then from there, once he's got that kind of, I don't know how you endorse it or whatever, but once he's sort of got to that point, then you sort of say, look, it's time for you to go to and build your career. Okay. You've done this. You've sort of, this is your support structure. This is your wife's support structure, whatever. Go and do it. But I don't think the club are doing that. And it's just one of those where he shouldn't play for the club again, but I don't think it's as simple as cut him loose, you know, get rid of him, and that's it, done and dusted. Mm. Yeah, I think that's a dangerous, dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. Something that is less emotionally troubling is we talked in June about what your summer would look like, how many transfers you might bring in, stuff like that. And ultimately, we decided that it would be determined based on which of the potential buyers bought Manchester United. And it's August, and that still hasn't happened yet. Have you felt the impact of a lack of clarity of ownership throughout the summer, and or do you think this will be resolved at all soon?
So the ownership stuff, I have no idea. It's kind of gone back and forth. It feels like the Glazers are just trying to squeeze every last billion out of whoever wants to own the club. But actually, it doesn't feel like it's impacted the transfer strategy, although I have like my own doubts about individual picks, but it feels like, we're getting rid of players, we're getting okay fees, we've addressed like probably the three most important areas of the team in terms of position. Again, individual personnel, that's a different conversation. So I think actually all that uncertainty at the beginning of the summer, which I thought would impact the way in which we operate, it's not been that bad. It's been pretty kind of not a lot of drama. Once a player has kind of been identified, we've sort of got them over the line. We're selling players who are fringe players, not going to be in the team. And there's probably a few more to go. Harry Maguire, potentially Scott McTominay. So there's money, like from an FFP perspective, some good deals happening there. I think overall, I think this is Ten Hag's influence. Like the strategy is there. From that side of things, it seems okay. I think we may end up doing a little bit more business. Again, I don't know about the individual personnel. Like we've just been linked with Pavard. He seems a bit of another underwhelming signing, but you can see what he's looking for. It's like a versatile defender to play in the middle and at right back potentially. I think overall strategically it's all going quite well. I'm excited to see Hoyland. He's a young kid. I don't expect him, like these comparisons with Haaland are, I guess, natural on a purely superficial level because he's tall, blonde and Scandinavian, which is ridiculous, obviously, because Haaland is probably the best player in the world right now. And this is a 20-year-old kid who scored 10 goals in Serie A last season. So I think, but I'm excited to see him because we lacked a proper number nine. And we finished third last year and won a trophy, got to another final with initially Cristiano Ronaldo up top, who was just not scoring goals, and then Weghorst and intermittently Martial. So having just somebody who is an out-and-out nine and then with pace and power, I'm really excited about that. And Onana, I think, we'll see how that goes. I don't know a lot about him, but he looks really good with his feet. And Mount is the one that I'm really underwhelmed by. But we'll see how it goes. But overall, the strategy seems to be being played out quite nicely, and the ownership situation doesn't seem to have affected that. And we'll see what happens. Mm.
You definitely have gotten in some talented players, obviously Fred departing as well. So it does seem like business as usual while you wait to see who takes charge there. Thomas, we'll come to you now to talk about Wolves. And tell me if you've heard this story before, but Julen Lopetegui, the week that a competition starts, has left his role as manager. It's weird that it's happened twice. What is the story behind why this has all happened at Wolves? I mean, we've talked over the last few months that there was kind of some stuff bubbling under the surface, but why do you think it finally came to a head? And why do you think it came to a head the week that the season was supposed to start?
Well, his version of events is that he was told when he joined in January that he would be given a certain budget to spend in the summer on recruitment. He was then told after keeping us up, he was going to be given a significantly reduced budget to build the team. And he eventually got on board with that. And then he was told during pre-season that he was basically not going to be given any budget to sign players. And and that's the reason why he said he was, you know, broken promises from the club and the board. And that's his version of events. And then apparently after one of the pre-season games, he said to the board that he was going to leave, but he would hang around until they found someone else. And then that led to them interviewing candidates and finding Gary O'Neill. And that's why it all switched over within a day. Unfortunately, it's one of those situations where only the club and Julen Lepetegui know the reasons and know the truth and the information. It is somewhat surprising. I mean, my view on it is that he could have stayed with the squad that was there and tried to make it work. I don't think it's as bad. He a lot of his sound bites kind of suggested that we had Luton Town squad, and I don't think that's the case. I think we've let go of a lot of players, and even though we haven't brought any in, the squad is naturally too bad. We've got a couple of players who are out on loan who've come back. We've got a couple of long-term injuries who've come back. My view is if he'd been a decent coach, he would have stayed and tried to make it work and enhanced his reputation through, you know, through taking an average squad and doing a good job this season. But you know, that's my view. I think his aspirations were to be in the top half of the Premier League, and he didn't think that he was backed by the club to do that. So he wants to move on, and I suppose that's the only narrative that anyone's put together. So I suppose we have to assume that that's the truth.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a very weird situation, but it did seem like he was pretty demanding. And we talked about on Twitter a little bit about how he can be kind of Conte-esque in that way. Of like, I demand to get these things, and if he doesn't get them, kind of throws up a fuss. I guess even in that version of events, it's nice that the bridge was kind of connected to Gary O'Neill. That's, you know, simply, but certainly an odd situation. You also mentioned some players kind of coming and going. The two that I want to note, outgoing, Adama and Jimenez both ending up at Fulham. And then today's news, not an incoming, but a staying, Kilman agreeing to a contract extension and being captain. What did you make of those ones in particular?
I suppose it's a bit surprising that Raul and Adama have ended up at Fulham. When they were ripping it up for Wolves in the Premier League a couple of years ago, I never would have thought their next destination would have been Fulham, particularly as I think Fulham were relegated at the end of that season. So it's kind of a mixture of a testament to Fulham coming back and a bit of an indictment on those players. Their levels have kind of, you know, dropped a bit. They're not there. I think we had the best years out of those players. I'll be surprised if they go on and do better at Fulham. I think they're good, okay, you know, Premier League players. And I'm not saying they won't do a good job at Fulham, but I'm a bit surprised. I thought Fulham might have had slightly loftier ambitions, having done well last season. But maybe they'll turn out to be shrewd players. I mean, they've got them both for $5 million because Adama was a free and Raul Wolves just wanted to get his wages off the books. So, you know, they've paid very little, next to nothing. So they could turn out to be very good acquisitions for Fulham. And they've been great players for Wolves, so good luck to them there. I think it's important that we retain Max Kilman. Apparently, the club turned down £30 million offer from Napoli in the summer, suggesting he's quite a good player. And I think there was it was important that he's our captain now. And I think we needed some solid ground, you know, that the supporters especially need to feel that there's some spine to this team. So I think retaining Max Kilman is an important one. So that's good. And as I say, that even though we barely signed anyone, I think two important things have happened. We've got Sasa Kalajnik back, who we signed for £50 million last summer. He's going to be important because he gives us a proper focal point in attack, you know, a big, tall striker. And then obviously Fabio Silva spent a successful year out on loan at Anderlecht and PSV. And hopefully, you know, he can come back. So we've got more options up front than we probably had last season. I think we were holding on a bit with Diego Costa, you know, and Raul Jimenez, who you know, struggled to come back after that injury. So I think we've kind of got some fresh impetus up front, which is a plus point in what's been a difficult preseason.
Gotcha. We'll certainly hope that all works out for you there. Jake, we'll come to you now to talk about Newcastle, who you may have seen have been pretty doubted by a lot of the publications and personalities that predict Premier League tables. But obviously, then you go out, you have just such a resounding win in your first match. Do you think people will have kind of cottoned on to the fact that you may just be good again this year?
Yeah, I think so. It has caught me by surprise a little bit that we've sort of not been given as much respect as you'd expect from a team that finished in the top four. I think if roles were reversed and Chelsea had the season we'd had last season, I think we'd see a lot more people predict them to finish in the top four than Newcastle. Even if you go back to last year, like, performance-wise, if you look at like the shots and touches in the box and shots conceded and all that sort of stuff, Newcastle are up there closer to Arsenal and Manchester City than they were to the teams below them. So even if you expect there will be some improvement for Liverpool, Chelsea, and if you think Aston Villa will get better, even if you think that, you know, that it would also take Newcastle to regress as well, which, you know, you're asking for two things there. Obviously, there's some unknowns with the Champions League. You don't know how that's going to go. Obviously, that could cause problems. It's an unknown. But, you know, it's an unknown how Brighton are going to deal with the Europa League. And it's an unknown how Villa are going to deal with the Conference League. But yet those two teams are still being consistently sort of predicted as higher up the league than Newcastle have. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a strange one to me. I think Newcastle consistently been very good for 18 months. I think we just continue to get better as a team. People look at the signings we made this summer and think they're not groundbreaking signings. But if you're trying to build a football team, you're not going for groundbreaking signings. You're trying to get players that improve your team and the way you play. I think if you watched the game yesterday, you saw the way Tonali played. He was obviously a big improvement. Then we also had Harvey Barnes who came on. Got a goal and assist, and he could easily have got a couple of assists, and he just looked like the perfect fit for the way we play under Eddie Howe. Sort of that quick counter-attacking and sort of high-energy, aggressive style. And he looks really good fit for that. And we saw what he did at Leicester. He always scored goals. He always created opportunities. So, you know, to play the team that creates a lot of good opportunities, he's obviously going to do well in it. So I think we sort of signed players to improve us and improve the squad, but they're not just those household names that you think, oh, they're definitely going to win. You know, if we'd assigned Declan Rice and, I don't know, if we'd assigned Declan Rice and Moussa Diaby this summer, a lot of people would be talking about us pushing on, but because we've signed Harvey Barnes and Tonali, they just don't seem to have the same respect, even though, you know, both of them arguably delivered two of the best debuts of the weekend, so... Yeah, it's an interesting one. We've obviously got Tino Livramento as well. He's a very exciting young player. So it'd be interesting to see how he goes. Obviously, he had some depth to the squad. And I still expect us to sign at least one more defensive player. So, yeah, I think we've got a really good squad. And I think what people sort of don't respect about Newcastle is you look down the squad and you think, oh, Jacob Murphy, he's not that great. Joe Willock, he has his you know, periods of good form, but is he really a top four quality player? Same with Sean Longstaff. You think, oh, if they get a couple of injuries, are they going to still be able to replicate that form? But a lot of these, I think with our team, the team is great in the sum of its parts. People like Jacob Murphy come in and do really well. Joe Willock was sort of on the verge of an England call-up last year. Same with Sean Longstaff. Players just seem to step up, and Eddie Howe just seems to keep improving these players. So, yeah, it's I'd still be quite reassured that we'll be up competing. I think if we finished any lower than sixth, I think that would be a surprise. Could happen. You know, you have to earn it on the pitch. But it just seems like the players are so laser-focused. The atmosphere is so good. They've just got they're so clear in the way they play. And I think, you know, people get over-enthused about transfers every year. It's like, who's won the transfer window? Which signings are going to push a team on? Transfers are one part of playing football. You also have your style of play. You have your academy, your infrastructure, you have The dressing room, there's so many parts that feeds into how a team does. Transfers are one part of it, and Newcastle are just a very good football team, and I think people should just accept it. I think maybe the Saudi stuff maybe makes people want to root against Newcastle, which is understandable, but I just think if you just watch what happens on the pitch, like if you watched Chelsea and Liverpool today, or if you watched Aston Villa yesterday or Tottenham today as well, you've watched those teams. It's like Newcastle are just better than those teams right now. It might not last forever. Maybe in a couple of months' time it's different. But right now, Newcastle are just a better team than them. So why are they not being talked about in that way? It just confused me a little bit. I'm normally a negative fan, but I just watched this team. I've watched this team for 18 months. It's like, they're just one of the best football teams in the Premier League. So you know, sooner to people start just realising that and accepting it, I think. Probably just the better, although maybe going under the radar is probably better for us. But yeah, I just think we are just very still underrated, despite the fact that we've had such a good season.
Sure. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. And then I wanted to wrap up pretty quickly here because I just noticed we passed the hour mark. You mentioned Livermento. How do you imagine him fitting in with Trippier? And also, would you like to advocate a bit more for your ESOC call?
Yeah, I think with Livramento, he's obviously a very talented player. He did really well at Atalanta when he was 18, had a bad ACL injury. He's only just coming back from that. So obviously some risk there, but the club would have done their due diligence on it. Obviously seen how he'd recovered at Southampton. There's sort of a couple of clips of him last season where I think he played against Brighton and was sort of keeping up with Matoma and sort of defending well against him. So it's obviously that he hasn't lost his pace. So I think that it's just a signing to sort of future-proof himself. You get a quality replacement for Trippier, a backup for Trippier, who's in his mid-30s, so he's not going to be able to play every game. And if he did get injured, you look at Manquillo or Emil Kraft, they're really good enough to replace what Trippier offers. Probably not. Livramento probably isn't either, but it's a lower drop down. And I think the difference with Livramento is, whereas Trippier relies on his passing and his movement and the positions he takes up, Livramento is very much a ball carrier, he's a dribbler, he runs, it's a different threat, it's like a different profile to have in the squad, which I think would be useful at times. I think he could probably also come on and play in the same team as Trippier, he could probably play on the wing. There's talk about him playing left back, I don't think he's going to play there, but I could see him and Trippier being on the right side at the same time, so I think it's a good signing. And obviously if he develops at the rate that people expect him to, he could obviously become a very, very good right back. I think it's a good sign. And the price is a little bit high, but you know, all prices are high in the transfer window, so it's difficult to really get a grasp on what's good value and what isn't. I think that's a solid signing. Isak, he's just a wonderful football player, isn't he? You just watch the way he plays. He's so graceful when he runs the ball. He's got such a gangly frame, but he seems to be so strong, being able to push people off the ball. And just the way he finishes and just the confidence he has. He's very just good to watch. Like, people compare him to Henri. It's a lazy comparison, but you can see sort of similarities in the way they do things. I think this year he's going to have a really good season. I could see him being up there. If, you know, Haaland's obviously going to win the Golden Boot unless something disastrous happens, but I could see him being up there in sort of the next two or three. I definitely think he's got that in him. And I think in the Champions League as well, I think he's going to do really well there. So yeah, I'm really excited to see how he develops this season. I think his ceiling's so high, he could go on and be one of the best centre forwards in Europe. Hopefully he does that in Newcastle.
Gotcha. Get him in your fantasy teams. Cool. Oh, well, we were wrapped there. Sorry for the long show. If you guys would like to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, that would be a good time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Kev. I'm not working on anything that everyone's going to be interested in, but you can find me on Twitter. My at is at @doc_Joshy. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for having me on again, as always, guys. If you want to read anything about Wolves or if your team is playing Wolves, Joshy, this is really a plug just for you, basically. You can go to wolvesblog.com and read. There's a preview up for the game, and there'll be a report after what will be almost certainly a heavy defeat tomorrow. So there'll be lots of interesting perspectives. So yeah, if your team's playing Wolves or you're a Wolves fan yourself, it'd be great to have you on site. But as always, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and thanks for listening. You can get me on Twitter at JakeJackman2N, where I'll post about anything that I do or write or podcast on. I'll post it all there.
Yeah, and I'm...
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me at Kevroff, and you can find the show at EPL Roundtable on that website. And of course, you could just search EPL Roundtable in any of your podcast clients, although you seem to have done a good job of it if you're already listening here past the hour mark. But yeah, thanks to these three for joining me today. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.